Hey, I'm Carrie K. Taylor from SquawkVox.com, and welcome to How to Afford the Life You Want, three strategies to create real change and reach your financial dreams on your terms. Now, if you're already a student of my work, welcome back. This will give you a chance to dig deeper and master the strategies to increase your wealth, your health, and your happiness. If you're new to my work, well, welcome. I'm so happy to meet you, and I'm thrilled you're here. I hope you'll find this a useful and fun introduction. If you enjoy this training, check out our award-winning money blog at SquawkVox.com and tune into our new show, the Cash & Carry Podcast. Everything we do here is science-based and backed with actionable steps that stick. We're about kindness and caring here. There's no shame or blame here. We all come from various financial backgrounds, so there are a lot of different reasons to be here today. Maybe you're feeling good about your money and you just want to reach another level, or maybe you're feeling a little stretched and you want to make a change, or maybe you just want to build stronger, more resilient financial habits. Whatever your reason, today is going to help. The desire to change financial behavior is near universal. I've seen it in all generations, backgrounds, ages, and we all know that financial anxiety is real, and we all want to fix it. We may have good intentions, but we often struggle with making decisions that benefit us. You know, decisions about diet, fitness, and money. We know what we should do. Well, we should exercise, eat healthy foods, and save more for retirement. But we still struggle, so don't feel bad or beat yourself up, because science shows the struggle is real, and you're not alone. So I promise that no matter where you are right now, whether your financial life is pretty solid and you're ready to reach the next level, or if everything feels painfully stretched to the limit and you need to make a change, what you'll learn in this workshop will help. And I know this because I've spent the last 12 years of my life sharing how a behaviorally informed approach to money can profoundly increase financial wellness. But here's the thing, I know we all have good intentions with our money because we all want what's best for our families and our futures. But at the same time, we can also be our own worst enemies because we often struggle with making decisions that can benefit us. So, you know, decisions about saving more for retirement or, you know, paying off a bit more debt. And part of the problem is we tend to see money as just a math problem. And it's not math. It's these things called emotions that trip us up. So I'm going to share three strategies that embrace what really matters: our habits, our behaviors, and our human nature. And taking even small steps today can have a huge impact on your wealth, your health, and your happiness. But while I talk about money for a living, I want to be super transparent here. I am not the perfect picture of perfection either. I had student debt, I've made money mistakes, and I've faced a number of crises too. I've been there and back again. So yes, I may have years of experience, education in both science and finance, and yet I still don't have all the answers. But through my own challenges and all the work I've done on the world stage, I am very proud of the results I help others create. With the right tools and strategies, it is possible to pick up from wherever you are and experience a new level of success. So today you have a big opportunity to make an impactful change in your life. But one thing before we move ahead, I want you to be aware of the sneaky, self-sabotaging thoughts that sometimes come with growth. You know what I'm talking about here. It's that little voice that creeps into your brain and says, "This stuff is common sense. Come on, Carrie, I want to afford to live on my terms. So tell me something else." Well, here's the thing about common sense and money, my friend. Money sense ain't common sense. That's nonsense. If we could all see through our subconscious biases and get past our emotions, then we'd all be financially fit or have financial freedom or financial wellness. And we don't. So if your self-saboteur attempts a brain drain, give it a ticket on the next train, because I want you to switch that destructive thought into a curious question and ask yourself, what can I learn from this? What if I take these tools and put them into practice? What if I just try it out? This training may give you a new perspective on something you're already familiar with, and today is a good time to apply it. And while we're going through these strategies, I want you to mind the gap. Yes, the gap, you know the gap. It's where you're standing on the edge of possibility with the best of intentions. And instead of taking the steps to push towards success, you instead stand still and stop. It's so common. Behavioral economists call this the say-do gap. It's the difference between what people say they want to do and what they actually do. We humans often make big plans, having the intention of reaching our dreams, and then we don't take the actions to follow through. Maybe it's analysis paralysis. Maybe you need a little nudge in the right direction, and that's okay. I'm here for you. So during this session, I'm going to pause at times, give you some exercises, and help you put the pieces into practice to take action. And because we're using science here, I'll cite the research because the evidence is powerful. This is where behavioral insights come in, and I'll share the strategies to bridge the say-do gap and turn your intentions, your dreams, into a reality. All right, then, let's get started. I want you to grab your journal and a pen and let's do this. So today you're going to learn three strategies that will help you create real change and afford the life you want. First, you'll learn about the single most important thing we don't think about when it comes to money, and this will make or break your success. I'm going to give you my go-to 30-second exercise that stops FOMO in its tracks and brings more mindfulness to your money. Finally, we're going to architect your environment so you stick with and hit your financial goals, and you won't need willpower to make it happen. So one of the things I love about being a consumer journalist is the email, and I get a ton of it. You know, people ask me questions like, is it worth it? And I love it because I'll go and research a product or a service and then give a value judgment. But I'll never forget what happened when I was asked about the Canada Goose parka. You guys know that coat, right? It's a $900 winter coat, and it's very popular around parts of the world. And when I went back to Toronto, everyone seemed to have one. But $900? But I was curious, so I went to the store to check it out. And it was so pricey that when I tried it on, a security guard waited outside the change room. You know, I looked at the fabric and I played with the zipper and I didn't get it. I didn't understand why everyone loved it. So I didn't buy it. Well, I didn't steal it either. But I went home and I wrote about it. So I wrote the story. I didn't understand why everyone bought it, so I asked them, why are you guys all spending so much money on a coat? When I published it and went to bed that night, I woke up and oh my goodness, it was a front page story on the Globe and Mail. The thing had gone viral. I was being asked to do national TV interviews. I was doing call-in radio shows because opinions were so divided. On one side, people said the coat was too expensive. They said, you're paying big money for a big brand. It's a luxury item. It's totally not worth it. On the other side, people said the coat was totally worth it. It's high quality. It will last for years. Hey, it's made in Canada. It's super warm. You won't regret it. The national debate was a lot of fun. But looking back, I had a moment to reflect and I thought, oh my gosh, everyone got it wrong. Everyone, including me. And that's because no one thought to measure the parka's value in terms of opportunity cost. Opportunity cost is what you miss out on when you choose one option over another. It's your trade-off. And sure, we all make trade-offs in life, but few of us reflect on how our present choices can impact our future options. Because when you spend money on one thing, that's money you can't spend on something else. Money we spend today can't be spent tomorrow. Money is all about trade-offs, and knowing your opportunity cost is the single most important thing you absolutely must tap into if you're going to be successful with money, because choosing your trade-offs can make or break you. And this is your first strategy, guys. Curb spending by knowing your trade-offs. Tap into your opportunity cost to make spending decisions that benefit you. When it comes to that puffy parka, that $900 could have been put towards anything. A home down payment, it could have been used to reduce debt. You could have put it towards a dream vacation in a tropical island in a warm paradise where you don't even need a winter coat. That money could have been used on anything other than a pricey parka. Could you get a comparable winter coat that costs less? Yes, of course you could, and you could bank the difference by putting it in a retirement savings plan and letting it compound for years. People who email me are often surprised when I suggest that there are alternative ways to spend money, and we don't normally consider the alternatives. We have a yes, no response, worth it, not worth it, hot or not. What we should be asking ourselves is this the best possible way to spend this money? But it's really hard to think about life this way, especially when, you know, emotions and FOMO get in the way. So I have a strategy to help you rewire your brain to consider your trade-offs. I learned this technique from an organic farmer who grows fields of hay for a living. And I don't just love him for his unique way of spending money. I love him because he's also my father-in-law. So I'd like you to meet Ralph. He's currently 87 years young, and over the years, he's made a few spending decisions. He's grown, cut, and baled a lot of hay. And he uses farmer currency to decide if something's worth it. Hay is his currency. And whenever he buys something, he measures that cost with how much hay he needs to sell. So in farmer currency, he can buy one puffy parka for 85 bales of hay. Now, I've driven a tractor, tried to bale hay, and it's hard work. So when I asked Ralph about his trade-off, he was pretty darn sure he wouldn't exchange that hay for a single coat. The opportunity cost for him was too high. Now, I know that farming isn't a common profession out there in internet land, so you're probably thinking, Carrie, what are you talking about hay for? And I agree, it's totally weird. But here's two things about wearing coats and making hay I'd love you to think about. One, we all get cold. Everyone needs a coat at some point in their lives. And two, not everyone earns an income tied to time. Many of us have our income tied to creating a product or a service, and we see a lot of this in the freelance and gig economy, which is growing, especially during the COVID pandemic. So maybe you knit sweaters, create art, build websites, sell houses, or create a unique product or a service. So consider how much of that product or widget or unit of work you need to produce to determine your cost, and then watch your spending decisions change. Now, for everyone else, we earn a standard paycheck. You trade your time for money. You trade your life for money. So let's measure the parka's cost with the hours you need to work to buy it. So let's meet Jesse. He's the reader who emailed me about buying this coat way before all the craziness happened. So I looked at his after-tax income to help him consider his opportunity cost. And I used after-tax because you don't get to keep it all. So when I did the math, it turned out that Jesse would have to work 56 hours. That's close to 7 full workdays to buy that coat. That's Jesse's real cost, his trade-off. It's 56 hours of his life. Now, was this coat worth it to Jesse? No way it wasn't. He didn't buy it. He changed his mind knowing his trade-off and decided to buy a less expensive coat. But is that parka worth it to you? Well, that depends on your trade-off. I don't tell anyone how to spend their money, and no one can judge your spending decisions but you. So here's my 30-second exercise to help you find your cost. It is the financial fix to help you curb spending and fight FOMO whenever it shows up. And it starts with tapping into a little bit of behavioral science to find your opportunity cost. And it ends with you bringing more mindfulness to your money. Step one is to ask yourself, what are the alternatives to buying this thing? Could you hit up the secondhand economy or buy a less expensive item? Maybe you can make do with what you have. Could this money reduce debt? Or could you contribute it to reach a dream goal? Step two is to figure out your cost in terms of hours or units of work. Now, here's a bonus thing to think about. Try to remember how you felt last time you spent some money. Did you feel happy, or did you feel the pain of buyer's remorse? Okay, I want you to stop this training and give this exercise a go right now. Be really honest with yourself and write down everything that comes to mind. Think of the last thing you bought, and tap into your opportunity cost to find your trade-offs. Practicing this little thought exercise now will help make it more automatic the next time FOMO comes a knocking. All of your thoughts and feelings are valid, and the more you put into it, the more likely you are to achieve your goals, which we talk about next. I'll be here when you're done. Promise. Welcome back. Now, if you didn't pause to do the exercise, please stop and do it right now. Just take a few minutes and give it a go, because let me tell you, if you don't, you are cheating yourself. There is power in writing this stuff down, and research proves it. Dr. Shane Frederick is a professor at the Yale School of Management. He did a study on 196 participants, giving them a choice between buying two similar items at different prices. When the price difference was also given as the actual opportunity cost, participants reflected on the money they'd be losing, and almost twice as many opted for the lower priced item than before. So I promise these seemingly simple ideas, they make an enormous difference. So now that you have the tools to break free from impulse spending, you can defeat FOMO and you've tuned into your trade-offs using the science of opportunity cost. Now let's move on to strategy two. And I'll give you a hint, it's all about the big things in life, realizing your dreams and reaching your goals. And I'll show you how with a quick money game to get you there. There are no wrong answers, guys. So let's do this. The game is called Which Would You Rather Spend? It's like Worth It or Not, but with money. There are three questions, and the rules are simple. Pick one answer for each. Question one, which would you rather spend? The money you get for your birthday or money you earned from your paycheck? Question two, which would you rather spend? Money you win in a lottery or money you earned on your paycheck? And question three, which would you rather spend? Your tax refund or money earned from your paycheck? Amazing, what's going on here? Well, if you're like me and most other people, you probably answered that you'd rather spend your windfall money, so your birthday money, your lottery winnings, and your tax refund before you'll touch your paycheck. And that's normal. We treat different sources of money differently. But why do we do this? Because isn't all money the same? Because the 10 bucks you get on your birthday can do the same work as the 10 bucks you get from your paycheck. You could buy yourself lunch. You could go see a movie. You could pay me that $10 and I'll give you two fivers back and it'll still add up to 10 bucks. So all these sources of money are interchangeable. Behavioral economists call this feature of money fungibility. It means that every dollar is the same, so you can exchange it for something else. So the retailer taking your 10 bucks doesn't care where it comes from. But we do. We treat different sources of money differently because we assign money to categories, kind of like accounts in our head. And these categories or accounts control how we think about the money, how we feel about the money, and how likely we are to spend it or save it. It's a bias called mental accounting. Mental accounting is attributed to behavioral economist Richard Thaler. He won the Nobel Prize for Economics in 2017. And this bias uses real-world accounting to explain how our brains decide to spend money. You know how financial institutions divide our bank accounts into savings and checkings? Well, our minds do the same thing with money. That's why we tend to spend our windfall money easily, but we act more responsibly with our paycheck. And that's why we'll spend money from our checking account before touching our savings. Mental accounting also explains why we'll blow our tax refund, but we'll be more responsible with our paychecks. Now, the downside of mental accounting is we often make these decisions on each mental account separately. So we fail to see the big picture with our money, and that this is all of our money, every dollar of it, because, well, it's interchangeable. So if you find yourself splurging with certain sources of money, like your bonuses or winnings or a tax refund, it's a good idea to pause and remember that, again, this is all your money. It's interchangeable. It's fungible. But there's also a huge upside to mental accounting, and I want to help you rewire your brain to make this work for you so that you can reach your goals. And we can use this bias to our huge advantage. So here we are with our next strategy. And strategy two is fund your goals by leveraging the power of mental accounting. This strategy is all about breaking free from the habit of knowing what you want to do with your money and actually achieving it. Because the truth is, one of the biggest things that stands between you and what you want in life is that pesky say-do gap. So let's start with making a list. What are your goals? What are your dreams? What are you saving your money for? Some popular goals could be save for a home, contribute to your retirement fund, or maybe you just want to travel to Paris. Shorter-term goals are awesome too. I'm saving for a new bicycle, and one of my friends is saving to restuff her sofa because she's been sitting on it for a year and a half. Now, I really want you to write these goals down. They can be big or small, short-term or long-term. Dream big and be honest. Okay, let's take a pause and I'll be here when you're done. Welcome back. I'm so happy you're here and I'm thrilled you've done the work to write down your goals. Because we all have financial goals. A big mistake many of us make, though, is we don't have a plan for funding our goals. And we don't set up our environment to make those goals a reality. We say we want to save for a home, then we feel overwhelmed, then we do nothing. Sound familiar? So let's change that. I want you to take a look at how you bank. What bank accounts do you have? Go ahead and list them out. Now I want you to take some inspiration from your financial goals, the ones that you've written down, and create a dedicated savings account to earmark that money. Then take another goal and again, create another dedicated account to save for it, and so on. What this system does is it takes your mental accounts, which are the goals swishing around in your head, and turns them into actual physical bank accounts. Instead of having to just imagine buckets in a single bank account, you have them separated right in front of you. It's super hard to think about saving money and staying dedicated to your dream goal when the cash is just sitting in a checking account. When everything goes into one pot, it's also very tempting to use that money for other purposes. It's way more exciting to save for a vacation or a new home if the money is in its own account and dedicated to that purpose. I interviewed world-renowned behavioral economist Dan Ariely about how we bank. He's the author of many New York Times bestsellers, including Predictably Irrational. Here's what he has to say.
In many ways, the checking account is like the garbage can of personal finance. It's, you know, you have money there. Some of it is for mortgage. Some of it is to pay your insurance in 6 months. Some of it is to pay your kids' tuition. Some of it is for summer. Like, it's really not a good system. Like, you wouldn't design a checking account. Like, you wouldn't go to a company and go to the CFO and say, can you make this investment? And he would say, let me look at how much money I have in checking. Money has been labeled. In fact, the moment your salary hits, almost all of it has been labeled. Some of it more than once. But you just don't remember the labels. So one of the things that Capital does is to be more specific about those labels.
So I want you to be super specific about labeling your money and dedicating accounts specific to your financial goals. And a big win by turning your mental accounts into bank accounts, doesn't matter whether you spend or save, is now you can visually see your opportunity cost in action. Yes, comparing one growing account to one spending account can help you see your trade-offs all in one place. So if you feel like dipping into your house account to pay for a fine meal in a restaurant, that's okay, but you'll know immediately if this is a wise decision. You may even feel a little guilty about using that money that's dedicated to a specific goal. Now the next step is to automate your savings and set up a transfer every time your pay is deposited into your checking account. You'll want to automate this process because making the decision to move the money every single time is exhausting, and you may be tempted to skip it because willpower, my friend, is a fragile thing. And the science is overwhelming because it shows that the savers who automate the transfer of money are the ones who achieve their goals. This is how to put your plan into action. You'll skip the whole say-do gap because the process is now automatic. Now, setting up all these bank accounts could get costly, so you'll want to find a credit union or an online bank with low or no fees. And depending on where you live in the world, you may have access to a behaviorally informed financial institution or a fintech app that encourages you to create a savings-based goal tied to an account. Some let you set a targeted date to achieve the goal and then automate your savings by moving the money weekly or monthly. For gig or freelance workers without a regular paycheck, some financial institutions even let you save a percentage of your income. And that's a big help when your income is variable. Now let's summarize our second strategy. Most of us use a bias called mental accounting to make spending decisions to our detriment. And by flipping this brain quirk on its head, you can leverage this bias to work for you, not against you. And science shows that tying your financial goals to a dedicated bank account can make saving way more exciting and successful. You're far more likely to achieve your dreams because you can see your success. Yes, you should automate the transfer of money because relying on self-control can be a losing game. And please include your retirement savings plans in this mix too. Now, I keep mentioning willpower and self-control. My final strategy shows you why it's so hard to rely on these emotional skills to stay on track. For now, though, I want you to make a quick list of all the things we're told to exercise willpower over. If you had more self-control over something, anything, what could you achieve in life? So I want you to pause this workshop and list it out, big or small. I'll be here when you're done. Did you do it? If you didn't, hit pause and actually write this stuff out. I promise you, you're going to thank me later. So let's move along to our final strategy. Number 3, change your environment, because willpower is overrated. When I first started thinking about willpower and self-control, I used to think the people with the most amazing habits had the most amazing willpower. But science shows otherwise. It turns out that the best savers and the most consistent investors often don't use willpower at all. They have a strategy that sets them up for success, and it costs nothing to get it done. So let me explain this to you with a piece of chocolate cake I used to own. Yeah, you guys know where this is going. Okay, I love chocolate cake, but if my goal is to eat healthier, then the last place I want to put a piece of chocolate cake is on my countertop where I'll see it. It's like a cue. I'd like to think I could use a little self-control to resist the deliciousness, but after walking past that darn cake a few dozen times, I just know I'm going to give in. Just a little taste, I tell myself. My willpower is pretty good because I didn't initially give in, but over time self-control depletes and I break down. I'm so tired from resisting again and again, and finally that cake is mine. I eat it. Now I'm kind of beating myself up over this decision because I guess my willpower wasn't strong enough. Now let's say I change my environment and move that cake from the countertop and stick it in my fridge. Since that cake is out of sight, it's out of mind, right? No, every time I open that fridge, there's the cue once again to think about. I shouldn't be tempted by all those chocolate layers, but it's there and it's tempting. So now I'm fed up with myself and I said, no more cake in the house. I can't deal with this. So I'm going to replace the cake with a bowl of fruit and I'm going to put it on the countertop where the cake used to be. And something really strange happens. I go from eating chocolate cake on the sly and beating myself up over it, and now I'm eating fruit. Whenever I walk through the kitchen, I grab an apple. My daughter grabs a banana, and my husband eats some berries. Seeing fruit on my countertop cues me to snack on something healthier. Now, I learned 3 things from this little experiment that I did on myself and my family. 1, chocolate cake is delicious. You can't deny it. 2, I haven't used willpower to eat more fruit. I still love cake. And 3, by changing my environment, I can change my behavior and I can build a good habit. To make a habit a big part of your life, you need to make the cue a big part of your environment. So if you want to build stronger, more resilient financial habits, change your environment in your home and on your phone. So if you're beating yourself up about a lack of willpower, just stop doing it. Our brains aren't wired that way. We're wired to respond to cues. Now let's explore how we can set up our environment to build better habits. So let's say you want to build a good habit of reading more books before bed. Well, a good cue to add would be to place your book on your nightstand, and that's exactly what I did. But I found that my phone was getting in the way of my desire to read more books, so I had to remove the cue and put my phone in another room. And what I did is I put it in the kitchen where the cake used to be and plugged it in overnight. Now what I've done is I've removed the distraction that was preventing me from building a good habit, and now I'm reading more books at night. A bad habit you may want to break is spending too much money online, and this is such a common thing. So one cue you could remove is you could delete all your shopping apps and unsubscribe from all retailer newsletters. Both these apps and these newsletters are huge cues to get you back on their sites and looking at so-called deals and shopping. It's super addictive. So deleting these things can help you save money. So let's make it a little harder. You may need to delete your credit card from all your browsers and apps because it's just so easy to do one-click shopping. And if you have to get off your butt to get your purse, to get your wallet, to enter all the digits to make that purchase, that's a lot of friction and you might want to do it. I know for myself, 9 times out of 10, I say forget it because I've had some time to reflect. Now, a final good habit you may want to improve is saving more money for retirement. And this is a big one for most people. So your Q might be getting paid. And when that paycheck lands in your checking account, you know what happens. You need to use willpower to move it over. And as we know with willpower, it can wane, and that money might sit there and find another use. So let's automate the transfer from your checking account to your retirement plan every single pay. And automation is why savers are successful. They take one good decision and they put it on autopilot. So to build better habits in every area of your life, change your environment. Add a cue to make a good habit easier. Remove a cue to make a bad habit harder. And automation puts good decisions on repeat. Now take a peek at the list you just created. You know, the one where I asked you to list out all the things you wish you had more self-control over. Take a peek and think about what cues you can add in your environment, what you can remove from your environment, so you can achieve your goals on your terms. Wow, you did it! So let's do a review. Today you learned three strategies to create the clarity and confidence to afford the life you want and realize your dreams on your terms. Strategy number one is to know your opportunity cost when making spending decisions. I walked you through a 30-second exercise to help you figure out what your trade-offs are. Strategy number two is to use the mental accounting bias to achieve your financial goals and then automate the heck out of it to make your dreams happen. Strategy number three is change your environment, because willpower is overrated. You learned how habits, both the good ones and the bad ones, are formed by cues in our homes and on our phones. And you learned how to reset these cues to create real behavior change. And finally, we talked about the say-do gap, the difference between what people say they'd like to do and what people actually do. And I shared many strategies to bridge this gap, improve our decisions, and turn your good decisions into a reality. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so honored that we connected, and I really hope I can continue to serve you as you build onto your dreams. Now, if you'd like to keep going and you want to know more about our talks, speeches, and other training programs, email us at squawkvox.com. And if you happen to get this session from a friend or family member, be sure to subscribe to our email list over there too. Because once you're subscribed, you'll become one of my insiders, which means you get access to private subscriber-only content. And finally, I'd love to hear from you. Tell me, has this training helped you create change in your life? You can send me your story of change to stories@squawkvox.com. That's stories at squawkvox.com. And remember, money sense ain't common sense. Cut through the nonsense, and you've got this. I'll talk to you soon.